This is Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiatakis. We're in Glendale, right by the Glen Oaks Golf Course. Let's imagine we're walking up the 18th hole after a long day on the fairway, and beyond the green rolling hills of the course are the sweeping views of Los Angeles below. We turn a corner and... ew, wait, is that trash? Yep, this is the best view in L.A. of Glendale's landfill. We are actually playing golf on a section of it that got closed back in the 70s. Well, now the rest of this landfill is almost full. It is scheduled to close in 3 or 4 years. But the city has a different plan. Instead of more recreational space, they want to build a power plant that turns the toxic gases coming from all that decaying garbage into electricity. Sounds cool, right?
That idea is not a bad idea for the right place.
But maybe not in Marie Freeman's backyard. I mean, technically, she lives right next to the landfill.
I thought, that's good on the outskirts of town. But square in the middle of an urban area like this, it makes no sense to me at all.
Well, now residents like Freeman have started a GoFundMe to sue the city to try to stop the plant from getting built. KCRW's Kaylee Wells picks up the story from here.
When Freeman moved here in the late 90s, she called the neighborhood bucolic, perfect for her third-grade daughter. Sure, there was a visible dump up the hill, and yeah, it's noisy, but not for long.
When we first moved into the neighborhood, we were told that there was a landfill up there, but part of it was closed, and the other would be closed in a couple of years. So not to worry, it's not really going to happen.
Now her daughter is 32, and the dump is still there. On neighborhood strolls, Freeman could see the dirt-covered garbage pile getting taller and taller over the years.
But as it grows higher and you walk up the hill at all, even down the street, it's very, very visible. The pipes are visible, the equipment is sometimes visible, so it's a presence.
A plant on top of it would have an even bigger presence. What they want to build is called a biogas plant. Basically, it captures the gas coming from rotting garbage and turns it into electricity. See, even after the landfill is full and sealed, all the garbage underneath continues to produce methane for decades. Even the garbage underneath that golf course that got built in the 70s is still seeping some methane. So first, a blower sucks that methane from the landfill and into the plant. The one you're hearing is from a similar one in Irvine that already exists. Then it gets compressed before it goes into one of four internal combustion engines, where it generates enough electricity to power the plant and 4,000 homes. Sure, sounds cool. Biogas is all the rage right now, and there's a couple reasons for that. Number one, methane coming out of landfills is terrible for the environment, and not regular old drive-your-gas-car-to-work bad. Julie Levin with the Bioenergy Association of California says it's really, really bad. She thinks biogas plants are a great idea.
In the next decade, scientists forecast that methane is going to cause more warming than carbon dioxide. All of the fossil fuel burning around the globe is not going to do as much damage to the climate as methane emissions, because methane is just so much more powerful in the short term.
So California said, okay, we've got to cut our emissions by 40% by 2030. And since a fifth of our methane emissions come from landfills, cities like Glendale have decided that's a pretty good place to start. So the city council approved plans to stick a biogas plant on top of the landfill. Right now, that methane isn't just getting released into the atmosphere, by the way. It's getting flared, which just means they light it on fire. That converts the methane into a significantly less potent greenhouse gas.
So from a climate change standpoint, it is definitely better to flare the biogas from landfills or wastewater treatment facilities, other sources, than to have it go up into the atmosphere as methane. But if you actually use the biogas instead, you can use it in place of fossil fuel gas or diesel.
Biogas perk number two. It might not be as clean as wind or solar energy, but it's a heck of a lot more reliable.
Solar and wind aren't there all the time. In fact, there have been a lot of studies over the last few years documenting probably about 90 days a year in California have neither sufficient solar nor wind, or the two together.
And she says we're seeing the effects of that already, with California using more diesel backup generators when those sources aren't enough. And yes, improving battery technology will help on regular days after the sun sets, but
batteries are never going to be enough to get us through 6 weeks of terrible wildfire smoke like we experienced the summer before last.
And if we have a big cloud pass over the Mojave, we need an energy source that can ramp up immediately to fill the gap.
And we're going to need a lot of that kind of power, but it doesn't have to come from fossil fuels. It can come from biogas. This is not a close call. We should be using every molecule of biogas we can, because it means it's one fewer molecule of fossil fuels. And because climate change is so urgent, and we should be doing everything we can to encourage landfills to capture all of their methane.
So yes, biogas is a form of cleaner energy, and yes, landfills are a good place to find it. Even Freeman, the Glendale resident, thinks so.
The idea of methane to a power plant is not a unique idea. It's not a bad idea. It's actually a fairly interesting, good idea. But where is it? You know, where is it? And what does using that methane to produce energy really mean in terms of impact on the environment in that place? You know, is this the right place for it?
The answer to that question is where the city and the residents don't agree. Right now, that landfill isn't zoned for a power plant. That would have to change, and residents are worried that could lead to building more industrial projects in their backyard. And then there's the matter of putting a power plant in a high fire risk area.
So the fact that it's located on top of an earthquake fault in the middle of an urban center with all this dry brush around it with one way in and out worries us quite a bit.
The other problem, the plant will be useful for probably about 20 years. Then it becomes obsolete because there probably won't be enough methane to burn. Residents like Freeman have laid out all these issues in a lawsuit they've brought against their power company, Glendale Water and Power. They want the city to reopen a pipeline that used to ship methane from the landfill to a natural gas plant across town. The city isn't into that idea because using methane at a gas plant doesn't help Glendale meet its green energy goals. GWP officials told me they can't comment on that, though, since it's all part of that pending litigation. Here's Freeman.
Open space isn't there so that you can figure out a way to make some money off of it or to turn it into something else.
So biogas can be a green energy source in California if it's used right. Whether it can be used in Glendale is still up for debate. For KCRW, I'm Kaylee Wells.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Onward now with KCRW's Greater LA. Steve Chiotakis here, and on to cryptocurrency, to a social club run on crypto and tokens, like, say, Soho House or The Wing or Noi House, but running on what are called FWB tokens, coming from right here in LA. FWB standing for Friends with Benefits, and no, not those kinds of benefits. It's what's known as a DAO. This is a DAO, Decentralized Autonomous Organization, that at its core is a social club, but it's also an investment group as well. And it uses a new digital platform called Web3, which is a new internet, which is different from Web2, which is where you upload pictures of your dinner for Instagram or maybe tweet something pithy on Twitter. If you're lost, don't worry, because I am too. And we've got a couple of people here to explain it. Rehan Anwar is one of the founders of Friends with Benefits. Hey, Rehan.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm all right. And Alexandra Hooven is the head of operations here in Los Angeles as well. Alex, welcome to you.
Hey, Steve. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm so glad to have you both, because I know nothing about it. I'm trying to get my head still around Wordle. So let's try and figure out what it is that y'all are doing over there at Friends with Benefits. Rehan, let's do a quick explainer, a quick fire. A round of questions, like I'm 5 years old, right? To set up a few things.
Okay.
Go. What is cryptocurrency?
Cryptocurrency is basically programmable money. It's used for coating. It's used for making digital art, but it can also be traded just the way you trade regular money or even stocks if you're so inclined.
How is this different from the current internet landscape, the current crypto landscape?
To use one of my favorite metaphors, I think FWB is almost like the KCRW of Web3, that you might find your favorite artists because you were listening to Morning Becomes Eclectic, and you go in deeper from there. You could listen to like sludge metal next to, I don't know, Charlie XCX. And that's what we hope to do for the larger community as well. Not everything is going to be a large multi-million dollar project, but you might find something that you fall in love with and want to build.
Dude listens to the radio station for sure. Wow. Alex, what is a DAO?
A DAO is a DAO, which is how we refer to it, is a decentralized autonomous organization, which is effectively a group of people that are coming together for a collective mission that are kind of all united around a digital asset, whether that is a social token like FWB or a non-fungible token like an NFT. So I'm sure you've seen a lot of these NFT projects pop up and communities that are sort of orienting around ownership of that asset and coming together to work on projects together and leverage those assets to kind of have shared equity and ownership in what they're building.
But say you're a person who knows nothing, like me, nothing about crypto or just very little, and you were trying to explain, like, why would you get involved in something like this? Why is it it's a social thing, so you can rub elbows with people, you're meeting new friends. Is that what it's about? Is it about making money? Do you get money on the other side of this? I mean, how does it all work, and what's it about?
Yeah, I think like the key difference here, you know, you said at the outset, you know, we're compared to a digital Soho House or Neue House or The Wing. You know, the difference is when you're using cryptocurrency or tokens as sort of the fundamental currency, you know, you're not paying a sunk membership cost, right? You're not paying $1,000 a month to be a member to you know, have access to really interesting cultural experiences and meet like-minded people. You know, I think that's why somebody would maybe join a Soho House. You're simply putting up tokens as capital, but at the end of the day, if you don't particularly find the experience enjoyable or valuable, you can sell those tokens. So, you know, it's not really about purchasing the tokens as an investment tool, but purchasing the tokens as a social tool to gain access to some of the experiences that we're curating, you know, both online and the main Discord, and then also in some of these individual cities. And so, you know, I think, yes, there is still sort of that, again, that barrier to acquiring tokens. It's not, you know, it can be a quite an arduous process. But I think, you know, these physical event on-ramps where, you know, you can RSVP to an event, go to the event, learn how to set up a wallet. And then, you know, if you enjoy your time there, maybe you decide to purchase the tokens. It's a really good way to introduce people into crypto in a way that doesn't feel so daunting.
Daunting. I mean, Rehan, when we talk about the clubs and Alex just mentioned them there, Soho and The Wing and others, you know, they're pretty exclusive clubs. And you guys are saying, you know, we want to be more inclusive. But, you know, how do you strike that balance if we're talking about money that you have to invest, or at least to buy into the club to be able to be a part of it?
I totally understand that concern. One thing we've done to really ameliorate that, Steve, is just done a lot of community-based events. Alex mentioned that we've done some charity stuff on the ground for our holiday party. We've even partnered with local LA record labels like Leaving Records to throw community events that are actually free to attend and pull up to. And really our hope there, again, is just to make sure that people understand that ideally crypto isn't daunting, it isn't a boys club, and that it feels very welcoming and ideally both socially and maybe financially empowering for a lot of folks to see how basically the next version of our favorite apps could work in a great place. So a lot of what we do week in, week out is community engagement and ways that hopefully are not exclusive and more inclusive.
What do you say to people who, you said it's not a boys club. It certainly has that impression to some folks, but that it's a particularly white space?
Oh, this is such a good question. I love it. I'm one of the original founders at FWB, along with a couple other amazing folks. And we have always, since day one, like, we came up on Telegram, on Discord, on message boards where, you know, meme culture is really heavy. Some of the most negative stuff you see on the internet is on full display. And we very much put our feet down saying, like, this isn't what we want to do. We would rather be, you know, here and uplifting, you know, folks who are like women, people of color, non-binary folks, et cetera. And that isn't just a speaking point, because oftentimes, like, as a brown guy or Trevor, who is our, like, our Genesis founder, basically, like, we've dealt with a lot of discrimination, a lot of stuff where the vibe feels adversarial. And for us to build something that is more cohesive and in the spirit of togetherness was really a tenet. Most of our leadership actually at FWB aren't just straight white dudes, which I'm very grateful for from a personal level and from an operations side, because everyone's just so great at what they do. And it's very rare for me to leave a call where I just don't feel like energized. I'm always super hype. And I think Alex can echo that sentiment as well.
Alex?
Yeah, absolutely. Plus one. Yeah, it's amazing. I think also just kind of touching on inclusivity, we did also introduce an FWB fellowships program, which was, you know, we saw the need for clear on-ramps for creative individuals who were maybe lacking financial resources to buy the tokens. That is something we now do on a, correct me if I'm wrong, Rehan, a seasonal basis, but that's been an amazing correct program that we've introduced to sort of combat that exclusivity.
I read y'all are in talks to buy Hop Louie in Chinatown that shut down like 5 or 6 years ago. This is, you know, it was a restaurant in Chinatown. It was a pretty popular place. It closed. Are y'all getting in the restaurant business now? How's that going to work?
Oh, New York Times Alpha. Yeah, I mean, we can't say too much about it yet. It's still super early.
Oh, sure,
but
you can.
We, we are exploring, you know, what FWB in a physical space, permanent physical space, could look like. And Hop Louie is an iconic LA institution, as you said, and we are exploring a way to sort of bring life back into that restaurant in a really interesting way that only crypto and Web3 primitives could do. So yes, I would say be on the lookout for more information around that. But yes, Hop Louie, we all is so beloved and would be so amazing to be able to be a part of bringing that back to life.
Well, thanks to you both for coming on and explaining this to me. I feel a little smarter now. Rehan Anwar, founder of Friends with Benefits, and Alex Hooven, the head of operations for the LA chapter here. Thanks to you both.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Thanks a ton, Steve. Take care.
Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Throughout the pandemic, restaurants had to pivot to survive. Some focused on takeout, others focused on creating outdoor spaces. Take Campo e Carbone, for instance, in La Puente. They went for the outdoor space option. But this restaurant is not your usual al fresco dining experience, because it's actually set up in the backyard of someone's house. Here to tell us more about this backyard venture is Mona Holmes, of course, our regular here and a reporter over at Eater LA. Hey, Mona.
Hello, Steve.
So who's behind this place and what inspired a backyard restaurant?
Campo e Carbone was founded by a couple, Adriana Alvarez and Chef Ulysses Galvez. They were both doing their day jobs. He is a chef. Plus, his family operates a produce company, and Adriana is an interior designer. The two took a trip to Valle de Guadalupe in Baja California, and they immediately fell in love with everything about it. But a few elements stood out for them. namely the 90% of the restaurants functioned outdoors and that they were imperfect. They loved a lot of things about it, like how minimal it was. It was very cozy, very welcoming. And they both come from the La Puente, West Covina neighborhoods and noticed that there were few, if any, defined dining options in those neighborhoods. So they wanted to bring something to the area they grew up in. And it's been a rave success.
Been a rave success. I got to ask this question, though. If it's a backyard, what are the zoning laws like? I mean, what are the legal issues? Can you just open up a restaurant in your backyard?
It's possible, but it's tricky. There is a law that was passed in 2013. It's called the Cottage Food Operation Law, also AB 1616. And it was also made far easier. A lot of restrictions were lightened up a little bit during COVID to make it possible for people to make and sell food products in private homes and sell them to the public. And Ulysses and Adriana, they do have a business permit, but there's ways to make this happen throughout Los Angeles County, and especially when operating as a private club, having a business permit, having a CFO permit, there's ways to do that.
How much attention have they gotten by doing this? Are they one of the few in greater LA, or do we have other restaurants that are doing the same thing?
You know, there are restaurants that are doing things within their homes. I've seen them. I've been to them. There's been some amazing businesses, but I haven't really seen a full-fledged restaurant where a host greets you. They take you to your table. There's bussers. There's bartenders. There's servers. There's actual kitchen staff. You know, they've actually put together something that's really special, all in a La Puente backyard. And over this past weekend, they introduced a daytime option called Campito. And they made items like French toast and smoked beef hash. And so they've made it enough so that they're going to be having Campo e Cabron twice a month. And people are really digging what they do.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the food. You mentioned Campito. You mentioned the French toast. It makes me so hungry. What kind of food are we talking about? Yeah, I mean, what kind of cuisine are we talking about? Because I want that.
Well, both of them are Mexican-American. And if you ask Chef Ulysses, his food is, and it's a term I use rarely, but it really does apply here. It's called chef-driven. And that's a descriptor that's defined as chefs that are able to have a creative vision and deliver it without any impediments. So Ulysses makes some incredible food that's inspired by where he grew up. Actually, truthfully, where I grew up too. You know, this part of Los Angeles that's just outside the main city and has its own culture and appreciation for all things that are in it. So he has a combination of Latin and Asian foods. So he served a kimchi belly carnitas with a confit pork belly and kimchi salsa, which is sounds amazing, and I hear it was quite good. A grilled tiger shrimp with sweet corn pudding. Mm. I mean, I would eat that. I have a thing about everything seafood. He made a grilled octopus with chicharron. So crackling pork, chili morita, garlic aioli, and arugula. So a nice salty, seafoody, and fresh flavor to go together. So, you know, and then there's another crowd favorite that was the crab Alfredo with garlic and cured cod roe. So he really does touch on a lot of things and all from their backyard. To me, this is very LA, you know, because we can do this most of the year. And this is embracing everything that makes us great.
All right. So how do you do it? How do you just go and park in the neighborhood or do you do a reservation? How does it work?
Here's what you do. You go through Instagram to Campo e Carbon. You send them a direct message and let them know that you'd like to attend one of their events. Check on Instagram to make sure that they're actually having one. They tell me that they're going to have them twice a month. I have a feeling there could be more because the response they tell me has been just incredible. But I do hope that this increased demand puts them in a space that's more geared towards outdoor dining, with an industrial kitchen. It's got charm, people love it, but it's hard to operate in a regular kitchen versus an industrial one. And I hope they can find one that captures the essence of what they found in Valle de Guadalupe and the magic of their backyard.
Mona Holmes, our regular here at Greater LA, of course, reporter at Eater LA. Mona, thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, a trip to an oil platform off the Central California coast. It's been shut down and decommissioned, but what about the platform itself? Should it be left in place to become a part of the ecosystem? You're going to hear that tomorrow on Greater LA. Online anytime at kcrw.com/GLA. Share your thoughts and ideas about stories you'd like to hear on this radio station, and grab the podcast too. While you're there, or get the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Again, kcrw.com/GreaterLA. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Andrea Bautista, Sonia Geis-Reguarna, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordall all had hands and ears on this evening's episode. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for lending us your ear tonight. Have yourself a great night.